Because I had always had this, like, fantasy of being a headshot photographer, but...
I love that you had a fantasy about that.
Yeah.
Hey everyone.
Hi.
It's Kara Lee.
And I'm Daniel.
And this is the Actor Hack Podcast.
Coming to you from Brooklyn.
And we have our friend David here with us today. Hey.
Hello.
David. Thank you for coming.
How are you?
Good.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, David, I actually didn't know this until Trey said this the other day. You were a film major?
Okay. Yeah, so, yes, I went to college for filmmaking. So okay. I went to NYU for film and TV production, basically. I grew up performing in community theater and stuff like that, nothing really professional. But then when it was time to go to college, I, like, loved filmmaking as well, and I decided that's what I wanted to study. I didn't think I was really good enough to make it as an actor, like... for my life.
And so then how did you end up getting back into performing?
Well, at the second semester, my second semester sophomore year, I studied abroad in Italy, which was amazing, in Florence. And when I was there, I didn't really take any film classes. I was taking, like, Italian opera, art history, you know, stuff like that. And it was really fun. And I ended up, like, singing a lot, just, like, in, like, talent shows and, like, random things. And I was like, I really miss performing. I came home, and that summer, I was, like, looking in backstage, and I saw this audition for a national tour of Schoolhouse Rock Live. And I went, and I had no idea what I was doing. I had two pieces of sheet music, like, not in a book at all. I just, like, put it down at the piano and went to the center of the room. Like, I didn't tell the person where to start, tempo, anything. And whatever, I ended up, like, booking this tour somehow.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think part of it is because I had no idea what I was doing and I had no fear. Like, you know what I mean? There was nothing really riding on it. It was just, like, for fun and...
Yeah, you didn't, like, need that job.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like, okay, I'm gonna be an actor now. I was just like, I'll just go sing for this thing and it'll be fun, you know? Then I had to come back and, like, dance, and I'm not really a great dancer, but I move really well. So, like, it was
really... So you can pick it up.
Yeah, it was really fun. And so I ended up getting it and I was like, whoa. So I took off my first semester junior year to do this tour, and that was really awesome. And, you know, the other people in the cast had graduated college and, like, were doing musical theater, and so that was, I was kind of like, wow, I kind of want to do this too, you know?
Right, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can make a career out of it.
I kind of looked into changing my major, but I would have had to stay at school an extra year, and I was like, no. You know, I just kind of used some of my electives to take some dance and voice classes, and an acting class too. And my first semester senior year, I also took off to do a regional production of Godspell and another tour of, like, A Christmas Carol. And then my senior year of college, I went to this random open call for the European tour of Hair, and I ended up getting it. I played Woof, which was really cool. And we left 2 days after my college graduation. I went to Germany to start rehearsal, and
that's,
I just
awesome,
kind of, like,
that's incredible,
started,
David,
doing it. Yeah.
That's really cool.
It was really amazing and fun and cool.
And so, as far as training goes, were you doing anything else? I know you said you took some classes as part of your degree, but, like, anything outside NYU?
I may have taken a few voice lessons. I don't really remember. I don't think so, though. Not at that time. Not, like, during college.
Is it just, like, having done it growing up?
Yeah, I think having done it growing up, I think also, like, the tour of Hair was in Europe, so it was outside of the union jurisdiction, so it was, like, equity and non-equity people.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other jobs were non-union, and which is not, you know, whatever, to say anything about that, but I think just because I was, like, able to sing and, like, have fun and be relaxed at an audition,
yeah.
It's not quite as... I mean, maybe we'll get to this, but, like, once I became equity, it was very much more, like, are you the right type? Like, are you exactly kind of this character? Whereas, like, Schoolhouse Rock Live, it's just, like, are you, like, a fun person who can sing well? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there really is that difference between a non-union audition and a union?
I think so. Like, I didn't realize... The first few years of my career, I was non-union, and, like, yeah, I was able to get jobs that I wouldn't be able to get once I was union. Not so much because of my talent or whatever, but just because of, like, my type, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So then there is some truth to that thing that I've heard as far as when people say, don't get your equity card right away. I mean, I've heard, like, two sort of camps about that.
Yeah.
I guess your experience was positive that you waited?
Yeah, mine was, and I didn't so much wait. I just kind of didn't
seek it
out. Come upon it or seek it out. I just was like, going to random auditions and getting whatever I got and doing the things that I got, you know?
Right.
And I was trying to, like, crash, you know, chorus calls and stuff like that. I guess also because I didn't go to school for it, I didn't, like, have a showcase. I was just kind of on my own, like, random path.
When did you get your equity card?
I got my equity card. So I graduated college in 2003, and I think I got my equity card at the beginning of 2006. So, like, maybe 3 years into it. And it was good, like, because I had been working, you know, pretty steadily. And I got my card doing an Arts Power tour. Do you know them? It's kind of like Theater Works.
Oh, okay.
It's like, you know, children's national tours. And Arts Power is actually no longer Equity, but at the time it was. So, and that was random, too. I wasn't like, I want my card, I'm going to go to this Arts Power thing and book it. My friend called me in the morning. She's like, I signed you up for this audition. And I was like, okay. So I just kind of went. And it was really weird. I remember I got there at like 2 p.m. or something. Oh, you're going to hate this. But they were like, there were so many people there and they didn't have time to see everyone. So they just saw all the men. Because there were so many girls they had already seen and they really needed guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible.
But I believe it, though. I so believe it.
So they were like, we're really running out of time. Like, we're just all the guys that are here. Yeah, I guess because it was an open call, they're kind of allowed to do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. If it was, like, an equity thing.
There'd be more rules, but
yeah, so I just ended up getting that tour, and I was like, I feel like I could take my card now. Yeah. And that was really fun, actually. The show was amazing. Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Oh, yeah, really that's fun. Cool.
Yeah.
Where do you get this, like, amazing attitude from? How you approach your work, it seems like a very sort of calm, positive foundation.
Thank you.
Where, like, what do you attribute that to?
I mean, I think, like, I do have a very supportive family, mm-hmm. which helps. I don't know, I've kind of always been kind of friendly, happy guy.
But I think that often translates into somebody that I want to work with. Like, if I see you in a room, that it's a positive energy. I mean, you know, as like you were talking about, he doesn't quite fit the role, but he'll work, and he seems like he's a good guy, and he can sing a little bit, he could dance a little bit, let's work with him.
Oh. There have been moments where I've been, like, really stressed out, and, like, not as positive, and then it's a lot harder to get jobs, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like a terrible circle. But I think because I was somehow able to get work, it just made it seem easier, and, like, I didn't feel like I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, you know? Mm-hmm.
Do you mind me asking if you've ever, like, have you had to have a survival job?
That's another thing that I was going to talk about. Like, I have been fortunate to be able to, I've worked a lot, but in moments where, like, I haven't been, I have, like, a cushion financially.
Gotcha.
That, you know, I didn't necessarily have to earn. And that, I think, actually really adds to my attitude in a way, because I don't have that, like, huge stressful thing, which is the number one stressful thing about being a performer. Or
totally.
An artist, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in New York, a lot of people don't have that.
Yeah.
And that's a freak out.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I haven't worked in a couple of months.
Right.
Yeah, completely. And it's only been a few times when I really have been like, I haven't worked, like, I have to kind of, like, really count on this, you know?
Do you mind if I ask you about Actors Hub, actually?
Oh, no,
if we talk about that?
Yeah.
So would you just kind of explain, like, what that whole thing
is? So Actors Hub, I think it was, like, around 2012 to around there, I was taking classes at this place called Landmark Worldwide, and it's this crazy whole thing that, like, basically helps you, like, see blind spots in your life, lead you to, like, breakthroughs that you didn't know were possible, whatever.
That kind of thing.
So out of that class, I created Actors Hub, a place for actors and theater people to go in Midtown on, like, that downtime where you're stuck there and you don't have enough time to go home. And you can basically go there and relax, and get ready for auditions and study and do work and just have a place to go. So you don't have to kill time doing nothing. Or
or be, like, propped up in a Starbucks, like, trying to charge your phone or something.
Right, exactly. And that kind of came out of the fact I knew that, like, I was in this situation where, like, I didn't, you know, I was, like, fortunate not have to, like, have a survival job necessarily, and I wanted to really create something for our community to give to people. Almost,
well, and it's an amazing,
you know,
idea, and it's something that could really help a lot of people.
Yeah. So I worked very hard on it. I was, like, extremely committed to it for about a year and a half. And, you know, I had this business partner who was this amazing guy. He runs an accounting office for, like, performers. And, you know, we had an architect and we had, like, brokers. And, like, we found space 3 different times. We were, like, heavy into lease negotiations, months of lease negotiations, and they fell through 3 different times for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Right. And is that a common thing in New York? Does that just happen all the time?
I think real estate in New York, from my experience, is extremely difficult.
And commercial is more so because it's longer term.
Right. And it's more expensive.
Right.
And because we're this new company and a new genre, a lot of people just were like, no, like, I'm not going to lease my space to you.
I guess if you're not in the field, so you want to, like, create a space for actors to come hang out?
Yeah.
Like, right. I guess it doesn't make a lot of
sense. It sounds strange, and it's like, as a landlord, you can choose what you want in your building. Starbucks is a much better bet. Or even a restaurant, a genre of space that has been proven to work.
Right.
Whereas, like,
there's a protocol there.
Yeah.
They feel like they're taking a gamble, I guess.
Yeah, a big gamble.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was also kind of scary. It's a lot of theater people and actors were very, very positive and enthusiastic about the idea, like, really wanted to do it. And we kind of worked out the numbers where it could really work, but, you know, it would be a gamble for us, too, because you don't know if people are actually going to pay a monthly fee to, like...
Right.
You know, I mean, I think people would have, but... And during that time, I was really taking a break, in a way, from performing. I mean, I was still... You know, I kind of told my agents, like, I'll work in town. That's basically it. Like, I didn't want to go out of town. I was, like, really committed to this project.
Well, that's a full-time job.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that you're saying.
By the third time... It didn't happen. I, like, had a few job offers out of town as an actor, and I was like, I'm going to do these jobs. And I was gone for maybe, like, 8 months. By the time I came back, I was like, let's go to more auditions, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just kind of... And not to say that it will never happen, but I'm definitely not in that, like, mind space.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I think... especially, like, a project like that takes so much work and so much time, I would run out of steam.
And you put so much time into it already, it's like, okay, is this worth more of my time if it's not gonna work?
So, I don't know, I still think it would have been awesome.
I totally do.
I know, actually, Equity, didn't they... I haven't been in there, but don't they have kind of, like, a space now that's a little bit-ish like
that? I think so. It's not to the degree that Actors Hub would be. And I also just, I kind of liked the idea that non-union actors could hang out at Actors Hub, and because I think that tons of them would.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still have hope. I think it's going to happen one day.
Thank you. I mean, I think, and in fact, we were saying, like, non-union people are probably more...
Yeah, well, they're going to go to those...
Never get more
benefit out of that.
Because
they can't even go into the Equity Lounge, you know?
Yeah.
Which is...
It would be a greater resource for non-union.
Yeah, and we were really also, like, counting on people coming to the city for the first time from college. This could be kind of a real home base. There's those of us who've been in the city for years, and we're like, ugh, we need to, like, go somewhere, and that would be exciting. But for some people who are just moving to the city, we could have really established that as, like, a nice, safe
place. And how great if you were just, like, hanging out there, and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to this audition later. Like, oh, I didn't know about that. You know, it would be a way to connect with other people, find out about classes and auditions. That you, instead of sitting in a Starbucks by yourself.
You also take headshots.
Yes.
And so how did that all start?
That's a great question. That was also out of Landmark. You know, I was a film major, and so freshman year was all still photography. And I always loved portraits, like people. Like, that was always my favorite thing to photograph. And so, I don't know, I just thought being a headshot photographer would be really fun. And I love meeting people, and, you know, I already had a camera and I was taking photos, but I was like, okay, I'm gonna put myself out there and be like, I want to do headshots. So I just started Trey, my husband, now my husband, then my boyfriend, was my first photo shoot. And my friend Courtney Reed, actually, who's in Aladdin right now. She's Princess Jasmine.
Oh, okay.
We did this, like, industrial together, and she, like, loves the camera. So the three of us went out, and I was testing myself on them, and it was really fun, and, like, we got really great pictures, and I just basically started taking pictures of all my friends, anyone who would let me, for free, so, like, everyone would let me. And, you know, I feel like I was like, I could do this, and I just slowly started charging, like, $25, or, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
To, like, just kind of,
build
I don't know, build my not really my portfolio, but my skill and my, like, consistency. Because mm-hmm. I feel like that's the most important thing right. as a photographer. Being able to deliver what people see on your website, you know? Yeah, and it's kind of incredible how much it's grown for me.
You have a big business.
It's crazy. And actually, when you asked about the survival job, like, it is, I guess, in a way, a survival job. But I also, like, love it. It's really fun. It's, like, another expression of what I do, what I love to do. And
because you are an actor and you know, I feel like you're able to communicate with them and make them very comfortable, and it's not, because I feel like headshot session uh-huh. could be like a really awkward thing, actually. I just imagine it's nice to have someone that's like, okay, we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
I know what it's like.
I've definitely modeled for some people that doing headshots before, and I was like, this is so weird. When is this over?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I would like to get out of
pictures
here.
Out of this.
Yeah.
Well, I love just getting to know people and mm-hmm. talk, and like, we happen to be taking photos right. as well, you know?
And it's yeah. about catching their personality, right? So you sort yeah. of have to talk to them a little bit. Yeah. Figure that out.
Yeah, a right. lot. And I also, with headshots, and it applies to acting as well, kind of was at this point where I was like, am I good? And then I kind of was like, you know what? My aesthetic and what I do is just what I do. That's how I take headshots. People can come to me, and if they think that I'm great, then they can use me, or they can go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, but this yeah. is my style. Yeah. This is what I'm...
And I was like, I don't need to judge myself whether I'm good enough.
Right.
Right.
I can just produce what I produce, yeah. and it's cool because...
It's not your business whether yeah, you're good or not.
Exactly. And it's cool because, you know, people seem to really enjoy what I do and, like, you know, recommend me to their friends, which is really fun. And it's interesting. I recently got my headshots done by Billy Bustamante. Do you know him?
No.
He's great. He's a really good photographer. I really like my pictures. But it was so interesting to be on the other side, and, like, his style is so different from mine. I had a moment during my shoot with him where I was like, should I be doing this stuff? You know?
Right.
Like, no. Like, this is how he does it, you know? Right. But it was interesting to kind of see how someone else runs
approaches it differently.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was great.
As far as auditions and doing the headshots and stuff, how do you schedule your life?
That's a great question. I'm very, like, overscheduled, which I kind of like. I like being really busy. I mean, the good thing about a headshot session is I can make my own schedule. You know I'm dealing with actors, so, like, if someone's like, oh my god, I just got a call back, I'll be like, great, when can we reschedule, you know? Mm-hmm. So it works the other way too. It's pretty rare, like, if I get a call back or an audition during a headshot session, I try to be like, no, can I do it another time? But, like, right. every once in a while, I will have to reschedule. I just kind of work it out.
Have you taken classes since NYU?
Yes.
Like, are there any in particular that you would recommend, or...?
Yes. I think it might have been kind of around the time I got my card, and I, like, couldn't get work. And I was like, you know, I have to figure this out. The first class that really, I think, changed the course of my career was VP Boyle's... He has, like, a Build Your Book class and then the Musical Theater Forum. It's Max Theatrics is the company, and that's the website. It's maxtheatrix.com.
Okay.
Max Theatrics, and it's the Musical Theater Forum. But it's like a 7-week class. The first week is just with VP, and, you know, you work on some material, and then every week after that is, like, a different casting director who comes in and you work with them. There's a really cool aspect to the class. You have homework assignments every week, mm-hmm. and you have also, like, I remember one week, while each person is performing, everyone in the class had to fill out questions about them. What is this person's strength? What are good roles for them? What, I don't know. It was like, it's interesting. So you had to fill out a lot of stuff about other people. One week, we had to find an audition song for everyone else in the class.
Wow.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That we thought really fit them.
That's cool, though.
It's really cool, because then you get all this feedback from your classmates. It was a very safe place, but, you know, people weren't just be like, you're great. Like, there was usually stuff that, like, you saw a common thread of what you could maybe work on, or, like, yeah. how the world sees you, because a lot of times you see yourself differently than other people see you, you know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of an incredible class for me, and it changed. I was able to really, like, pinpoint my strengths, and I kind of created this audition song out of it, like a comedic kind of thing that I used for so many years and got me so many jobs.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right after that class, I booked this very high-profile job from an EPA that, like, I certainly would not have booked without taking the class. And then a few years later, I think that was, like, in 2007, and then maybe in, like, 2010 or 11, I took the Next Step audition workshop. Again, really focused on what your strengths are, where you fit in the industry, but also just building your, you know, skills as an auditioner, as an actor. And again, I was able to kind of see, like, oh, these people see me differently than I really see myself. So let me, like, see how I can explore how I'm being seen. Also, out of that class, Nicole hooked me up with Christopher Freer, who was at Clear Talent at the time and is now with CGF. And he's been my agent ever since, and he's amazing.
When you got your first agent, how did that come about?
So my first agent, you'll never believe this, from a mass mailing.
Seriously?
Seriously. Wow. I mailed my headshot and resume to, like, 20 people or something, or 40, or I don't know. I was just, like, mailing it out a lot. One person called me. I met with her, and she liked me, and she became my first agent. Can't even remember who my agent was after her. I think I was just at a place where I felt like they weren't doing enough for me, or, you know.
You had, like, fallen through the cracks, maybe. They weren't, like,
paying attention. Yeah, I don't know. And I, one agent, I was freelancing with him for a year, and I got, like, 4 jobs in that year on my own. I was, like, working all year. But because we were freelancing, I, like, didn't give him 10%, which in hindsight, it's like, I guess if I wanted to cultivate that relationship, I should have. But then he dropped me at the end of the year, and I was like, I've been working literally all year, but he wasn't really getting things. You know, it just wasn't a match. Who knows? I will say that my agent, so now I'm with CGF Talent. Like, I think they're amazing. Yeah.
And now I want to ask you about the 2 music videos that you've done. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, like, these backstage music videos are, like, a thing, right? So when I was doing Fiddler on the Roof at Goodspeed, which was my favorite job I've ever done, the guy who played Tevye, his name is Adam Heller. He's the most incredible actor, amazing person. And his girlfriend is Beth Lovell, and she was doing Hello Dolly at the Muni, and they made this backstage music video, and the guy who played our Laser Wolf, he, like, came in one day, and he was like, all right, who's doing our music video? I put my, like, film hat back on, and came up with the whole idea, and we made this music video, and it was really fun. Like, the whole cast had so much fun, and it came out well, I think, and, you know,
oh my God, it's so
we
good.
Put it on YouTube, and people just, like, loved it.
Yeah.
So how can people search for it?
Fiddler on the Roof, Goodspeed, Rude. It was to that song Rude.
Yeah, it's, like,
by Magic. I think it was cool because the song Rude somehow is exactly the story of Fiddler on the Roof.
I know.
And it was very popular at the time, so. And then when I got the national tour of White Christmas, I was like, I want to make a music video. Right when I got the job, I was like, I want to make a music video. So I was, like, thinking about what songs to do, and then, well, the Fiddler one we shot in, like, 4 days. The White Christmas one, we shot over, like, 10 days, but by day, I mean, like, the show. Like, it was only during showtime. So one day, maybe I would shoot someone at intermission. You know what I mean? It's not like...
Do you run into any equity or copyright or...
I guess not, but yet. In terms of equity, you know,
if you're not shooting them doing the show, it's not a big deal.
Right. Well, okay. We actually got something on the first day about, like, social media, and it's basically, like, backstage is fine.
Okay.
People take pictures backstage all the time and put them up everywhere.
Right.
And then in terms of copyright of the song, because the White Christmas one was to Underneath the Tree by Kelly Clarkson, which obviously we don't have the copyright for. YouTube, I looked into it. It's very interesting. The second you upload something with a copyright song, YouTube, like, knows immediately. They just have these, like, this amazing software, and they're like, okay, this, you don't own the copyright. So they tell the person who owns the copyright, and that person can either take the video down or can monetize it. And what they usually choose to do is monetize it. So that's why there are ads at the beginning of my music videos. I'm not making money. It's the people who own the songs that are making money every time someone watches the video.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
It is cool, and I think I understand it pays for them to do that because it's basically free advertising for their song.
Yeah.
It's like thousands of people are listening to this song who otherwise wouldn't have.
I run into stuff with YouTube because of actor reels. Those things get ripped down pretty quickly on YouTube. And I guess it's just from the source. I guess it's from the networks.
But both of my videos are banned in Germany. So I guess Germany has a different policy. I don't know.
Seriously, though?
Yeah.
scandalous.
I know.
Yes. Yeah. Watch out.
International.
Next time you go back to Germany.
Yeah.
Looking out for you.
Oh, can I say something?
Please do.
It's back to the whole agent conversation.
Yeah.
I got this really amazing advice from my friend Jeff Blumenkrantz, who's an incredible actor, composer. And his advice was to not look for an agent, but to concentrate on getting work. He's like, because that's what you want, ultimately. You want to be working.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just want an agent. Like, you want an agent to get work. Concentrate on getting work. And that was, like, kind of the best advice I ever got, because it's kept me very proactive in terms of getting my own work, and also I wasn't as crazy about, like, trying to get this agent, because an agent is gonna be more likely to want to work with you if you already have relationships with casting directors, if you already have, you know, a resume, if you're already getting work, whereas if you're someone who isn't really getting a lot of work or isn't really pursuing it.
I've always been of the thought, being a manager,
yeah,
is that agents and managers don't get you jobs. You get you jobs, but we open more doors.
Right.
So I think it's a lot easier to see the potential with someone if they've worked on their own and gotten all these things. Okay, this person's going to continue to work hard while I work for them.
And,
so.
Yeah, and ultimately doing work is is what you want.
Don't waste your time focusing on getting an agent.
I feel like if you're, like, a theater major in school, a lot of schools have stances about
that. They have rules that you can't work, which,
yeah,
to go on record, I think is bullshit, but...
So, I don't know. So, I never had someone telling me, like, you can't be auditioning for outside things, or, like, it was just never a conversation, so...
Before you graduated, you already had, like, a foundation.
I also, like, figured out that I wanted to do it.
If you think about it, if people allowed undergrad theater people to, like, work, and they did a good job in the summer, if they had to take a semester off, and they were like, this is awful, then they could just change their major,
yeah,
rather than have this degree that they're like, wait a second, I didn't want to do this.
Right.
You know?
Like an internship that a normal, or a more professional line of work might encourage you to take on your junior or senior year.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
To make sure that this is what you want to do.
Yeah. Obviously, there are people who get jobs while they're in school and never finish their degree and have really successful careers, or like don't, and then later are like, all right, I want to go back to school for what I really want to do now.
I think with people like you that were so ready to work, you were so castable and ready to go out there, being stuck in a program for a couple more years while you were, you know, again, not doing these other jobs. Like, if you weren't touring around Europe, you'd be, you know, at NYU, like, in a studio show that nobody saw.
It's really about right now, like, what I'm doing. Maybe I have an audition today, and it's about doing great work at that audition in the moment. Or maybe I'm singing at a nursing home, and it's about giving the greatest performance and, like, touching these people, you know? And like, obviously, it's great to have goals and, like, to want more or bigger or just different things. But, like, I definitely have those moments of, like, I wish I was a bigger name so I could get seen for things that I can't get seen for. Or to be further along. I think it's just important to remind myself of all the wonderful things that I do have. And
be grateful for that.
Yeah.
We're going to go to our hack portion of the show
God, okay.
I have one that's relatively unrelated to kind of the themes that we've been talking about, but I've been wanting to say this. Most people already know about this article. I feel like it's been passed around the acting community, but Jenna Fischer wrote this great thing. Y'all know who I'm talking about?
No.
The Office. She plays Pam.
Oh, okay.
She wrote this great article about not working for 10 years. And then I think it's a nice reminder of... Basically, it humanizes people who you know now, and I don't know. It's just a good essay. I'm not correctly describing it. Just go look at it. You will not be sorry.
I mean, a lot of people that we know and love and think that, oh, they've just been acting forever. Like, actually, they weren't acting for a long time.
Yeah, I think she was saying she got, like, an episode of Spin City, and then not a whole lot.
Right.
And then The Office. So, like, I mean, Spin City is, like, a million years old, so.
I also want to say, in terms of the whole headshot thing for me, has been really... It kind of highlighted the fact that it's okay to have other passions, other things in your life that you actually love.
Yes, you cannot see, but Carolee and I are shaking our heads.
Because I feel like sometimes... Even I am in this place of, like, I need to be acting, like, if I'm doing anything else, or not even, because I'm making nice money as a headshot photographer, and, like, it's okay that it's not a survival job. It's actually an another thing that I really love doing. So, like, if you can fill your life with jobs that you love,
that's
amazing.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because I feel like people saying you need a backup has such this negative connotation that so many actors I know, even whenever I was in school, I was like, you know, backup is like a dirty word. And it's like, it shouldn't be backup. It should be like a supplemental thing. It's exactly what you said. I don't think it should be a bad thing to want to do other things too. Like, you don't have to just, you know, be like, I'm either an artist and that's how I'm making money. And if I'm not making money doing that, then I'm not going to be a sellout and do other things. That's not what it is.
And it's not necessarily splitting your focus. I mean, like, a side job as a headshot photographer, you're meeting actors all the time. Mm-hmm. You're networking as you're doing it. You're still in the community. You're not dividing your focus. You're tapping into another passion of yours.
And if it can be something that you're making money at, that's so much better. Because you don't want to be doing a job that you hate just to be making money.
Doing a job that you hate is exhausting, and you will not have any energy to do what you really like. I guess I would hark back to those classes that you were talking about where you got some peers to sort of help you figure out your type. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, in school all the time, they tell you, like, you have to figure out your type, you have to figure out how other people see you, and blah, blah, blah. And yet, at the same time, they're casting you as liberally as they possibly can, mm-hmm. because they're trying to cast a play of 30-year-olds with 18-year-olds. Personally, it was very confusing, being like, okay, what kind of type am I? I played romantic leads in all the Shakespeare's that I did. That's not my type. Yeah. And, like, me showing up doing Romeo is not a good idea. But that's the monologues that I had. And so, I don't know, I think it's really important to ask around. Ask your professors, okay, I'm playing this Lanford Wilson role right now, but what am I actually typed for?
What can I compete with? Like, what am I marketable as?
When I get out, what are the monologues I need to be showing up with?
Yeah, because we've talked about this before, because I was, like, a bunch of old ladies in college.
Right, exactly.
So, like, it was, like, all incorrect material. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a great thing. Yeah.
And when you know your type, then you can sort of play with that a little bit. So,
yeah, not saying that you're limited to just these things, but it's a smart thing to know.
Yes.
So you don't waste your time going to these auditions for things, especially the more mainstream stuff that's not going to go off type.
Mm-hmm. And when you don't have a lot of experience, you need to be that soldier number two or something. That's what you're going to be playing, so you need to know if you're right for that.
And those classes that I took were really to actually learn and to get better, and not so much... I know there are a lot of classes now where it's about meeting the agent or the casting director or whatever.
Right.
And that's great if they're also a great teacher, but, you know, I think going to a class with the purpose of actually getting good value from the class itself is...
I always say that to people and clients, actually. I'm like, if you want to meet a casting director, take an audition class from them. Don't just pay to meet them. I think that's all she wrote, huh?
That was lovely. Yeah. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much, David. Guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening, guys. Please subscribe to us on iTunes.
Write us a review if that would be really helpful.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and email us at afterhackpodcast@gmail.com.
You've been listening to All That Glitters by Sweet Sabrech from the album Days and Nights.
If anything, my mother will listen to it.